Hello, and welcome to the Scotchcast, a Giant Bomb Community's Iron Chef off-topic podcast. Did I do that right?
Sure. I don't know.
Yeah. We are the Giant Bomb Podcast. I think that is the official title.
Hey, everybody, it's Tuesday-ish.
It's not Tuesday. Today.
It might be by the time it goes up. We need to stop infringing upon Ryan Davis's territory. Because fuck that.
He'll haunt us.
Yeah.
That actually be pretty awesome.
And you know, I didn't want to be haunted by it. Would be Ryan Davis. Like, that would be fucked.
That would. I don't know. You go either way with that. Self-confessed cynic. I mean, it's. Why would you not want to have Ryan Davis haunt you?
Because he's a connoisseur of like movies and stuff. So he probably knows all the ways he needs to be able to scare you like as much as possible. I bet
he's a bit of his spooky laugh. You just get his giggle.
Yeah, he probably couldn't keep a straight... No, I reckon Ryan Davis could keep, like, the stoniest of faces when he wants to. Like, he'd laugh, like, 10 minutes later, but during, you'd just be... Yeah.
I would love to go down this road some more and talk about the hauntings of Ryan Davis and just ghosts in general, but we're trying to get a short show yet, things to do on this lovely Saturday recording day.
Do we have things to do? Like,
you have things
like
to do.
It's going to be, like, 2 hours or so. Like, I mean, it's going to be a two-hour show. I think we can spare the time.
Well, okay, Shimboy, what's your take on Ryan Davis hauntings?
Being haunted by Ryan Davis?
If there's one person of the Giant Bomb cast, or just the Giant Bomb like crew, the greater crew, that you would like, you'd be okay or not okay with them haunting you?
Not okay would probably be Ryan Davis. Okay would definitely be Vinny.
Yeah,
Vinny. Yeah,
oh,
he's like,
yeah.
Casper.
Yeah,
the friendly
I was
ghost.
Fucking say that shit, you dick.
So, New Brahma, ignoring what was just said, same question to you.
Again, Ryan, because he's like such a trickster, and there's not enough room in my house for a big man like Ryan Davis to hunt.
Who'd be second place? Alex Navarro?
I like Navarro, but I think, well, I guess, who's the most
mean-spirited?
Who's the most mean-spirited, I guess?
I would not want to be haunted by Rory.
But Rory would have like ghost dogs with him, wouldn't he? Like ghost puppies?
Ghost puppies.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, Ryan is a no, and then since fucking Vinny was taken, Dave or Drew, that would definitely be my next choice. In fact, I'd have all three of them as ghosts in my house. That'd be pretty cool. Chain them to my basement so we can hang out.
I like how I have all these art assets from various like We've done like 3 or 4 streams so far of recording episodes, and I've just been accruing all these really dumb images and just throwing them up there. Just for whatever the topic's at. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's ghostly, I guess. I don't know. Once again, my name's Thurbleton. This is the Scotch Cast. We're going to do a Lincoln Cast. No, I'm just reiterating things. Yeah. Just keeping the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we talk about ghosts. This is the off-topic podcast. We were going to do a Lincoln Cast today, but we're trying to try that next week. I don't know. We'll be throwing in some Guild Wars
next
stuff.
Week. There might be something else in
yes.
the works.
Shinboy is doing another one of his specials next week, I believe.
The last one was so amazing.
Basically, I want to get one point across, though, is because I told this guy I'd give him a shout out like a week and a half ago, and I still haven't. And a shout out to Tenebri Renato. And apologies for mispronouncing your character name, but he gave me a hand in Guild Wars 2, and I told him I'd give him a shout-out.
See, I was going to ask if there was a reason for the shout-out, but there you go.
Yeah, long and short, anybody remembering from last week, we did, or I did the Hunger Games minigame and raged a bunch about it, and I was like,
why? It's really good. Why would you rage about it?
I'm not a fan of the Hunger Games.
And you're a bad person.
I am a bad person.
Are you a fan?
Are you talking about the movie or the book now?
How dare I be a bad person about not liking kids killing each other?
I thought you meant just the minigame.
Not a fan of the minigame, but whatever.
But it's like they're killing each other for survival. It's not like they're killing each other because they hate each other.
Well, no, I'm trying to survive to get a chance to get that back item.
Oh.
And the guy was
just buy it for super cheap.
Well, no, that's the guy just told me like, oh, you can buy it, and then ended up giving me one.
Oh, okay.
For freebies.
Are you a fan of Battle Royale?
Yes, Battle Royale is much better.
But, so what's your actual reason that you hate it, despite it's also kids killing kids?
Because that's a story about love.
Oh. Because I thought
Battle
you were
Royale
missing,
is a story
like,
about
what, One Iron is like white kids killing white kids, and that's unacceptable to Thurb. It has to be Japanese kids.
Well, no, there was a black kid, two black kids in.
That was when it was acceptable for you, is what you're trying to say.
It is a melting pot of kids killing each other.
This podcast towards racism every time.
Both black kids died. It's not our fault.
It's not our fault.
It's
we
not
didn't.
Our fault.
There can only be one podcast, and that podcast is probably going to be the Mighty Electronic Box. But
I feel sick.
Whatever. I guess we'll start off with what we've been playing, and go into New Brahma.
Oh, why am I so restarting?
Well, I want to start with you because you always feel bad that you're always the last one in line. I'm like, no, we're going to put the spotlight on you.
I guess the game that's like sort of new that came out within the last 12 months, I think, that I've been playing is Hitman Absolution, which I picked up during the sale. And have any of you played Hitman Absolution?
Nope. I had the option of getting it for free on PlayStation Plus, and I didn't get it.
Okay, so that really says a lot about the game. I think. Yeah. Have you played any of the older Hitman games?
No, I'm a Metal Gear guy when it comes to stealth action. So Hitman never came off on
the
me.
The problem with Hitman is like, it's not even a game where you're supposed to be a hitman. It's mostly a game where you go from point A to point B without being noticed, and you rarely really kill people. So it's
a stealth game that is like it's stealth in a modern day sort of thing, not like sneaking also, around corners.
Yeah, it's sort of like there are parts where it's like fucked up because you get points deducted for killing people, which I mean, like, you have to kill people and hide their bodies, but you still lose points if you kill the person. But for example, if you knock them out non-lethally and then you put them into like an endless pit, they would theoretically die, but they're not dead as long as you knock them out. Just weird mind bugs like that. And the fact that there are missions where they're literally, you're not even sneaking, they're just shooting at you, and if you shoot back, they deduct like half the points you earned. It's a shitty game.
What?
So
have you played the older Hitman games?
Yes. The older Hitman games it's about being a hitman, and this game is about hiding and then going from point A to point B.
Yeah, it's I enjoyed the other Hitman games, especially like I didn't enjoy playing them as much, but I enjoyed watching them, and like there are people who've done videos of like a really well crafted like presentation of all the different ways to go through level and kill people or end up like failing comically the ways to kill people. And those games compared to the new Hitman it's a lot more like not free roam, I guess is the best way to put it, right?
It's very, it's all indoors. It's very like corridor. You go from, it's literally usually just a straight corridor with some rooms on the side, the indoor maps, which are the most of them. So it doesn't really give you chances to innovate. It really just gives you like two options sometimes. Maybe sometimes you don't get any options, and then you have to sneak past this dude and get to the door and then go through the door and then escape. And there's no killing. It doesn't make sense. I just want to kill. So I got to the point where I stealthily beat the entire campaign. And because I like the shooting in the game and it doesn't let you shoot, I just went back and killed everyone each round, including the civilians. And I feel like that's a problem with my brain.
Well, and something I've seen with this game compared to like, and I'm not sure if this is like it with the others, is like the contract system, like a weird multiplayer.
Yes, the multiplayer is sort of, you can create your own missions and then put them online for other people to play. But the thing is, you're not creating them out of game. So you go into the mission as the player, and then you actually point out the targets, and then you have to actually do the mission yourself before it can be posted online. So the most difficult mission is something someone has actually completed by actually playing the game, which I don't like because I like to make impossible missions and fuck people over. And that's not possible because I'm not very good at being sneaky and shooting people in the head. So every time I try to make a contract, I end up having to kill everybody before exiting the mission.
So you want to kill everybody, but right. You want to make it so that other people
exactly.
are unable to kill everyone.
Right, exactly. I want to just make a mission where there's a sniper at every corner, but you have to sneak through. But I can just kill people and get through it. So I don't know. The concept is really cool. The gameplay, not so much. But the shooting is pretty cool. And the graphics are pretty cool. But altogether, it's sort of mediocre. But if it was $10, do pick it up. Although it is a 25 gigabyte game for no good reason.
So basically, it's to the PSA to folks is just like put it on the Steam wish list, and when it goes on sale,
if you live in Canada and you have a bandwidth cap, this is not the game for you. But if you have no bandwidth cap and your internet is fast and you couldn't care less about hard drive space, try it. It's not a horrible experience. It is mildly mediocre.
I just don't think I'm in the mood for stealth games because I played
exactly,
like
that's my problem. If it wasn't a stealth game and I could just shoot everyone without getting, you know, penalized, I think you would be okay.
Then it'd be Call of Duty.
Right, but it's like Call of Duty has people who shoot back at you and you're not like invincible on the easiest difficulty.
It's weird because I tried some Mark of the Ninja and I just couldn't get into it because the problem with stealth games for me is like I finished the Metal Gear games 1, 2, 3 and I think one other, but it might have just been those. Oh, 4, obviously. I finished them in like the most harder. Oh, I didn't ever did like big boss. I did it highest difficulty, no encounters, no kills. The only thing I couldn't do was do it under time because there's a multiple like objectives with each of those games, and if you complete those objectives in a replay, like a new game plus kind of thing, you get like a special reward. So for example, they give you a bandana at the end of that and gives you unlimited ammo for forever or unlimited stealth and stuff like that. So you get those rewards from completing these what are essentially unnamed challenges in the first three games, and the last game they actually had like a little leaderboard thing at the end which showed you what you were able to do. So I did those games, no encounters, no kills, which meant I've never seen. And I never killed anyone for the entirety of those games. But the way you do that is, especially on the highest difficulty, you sneak as well as you can, and the moment you're caught, you reset the mission. And that's the only real way to do it.
It doesn't sound fun at all.
Well, there's disguises in this game, so you can disguise as a police officer or stuff like that,
right,
and just muck around, which I think is the best part of this game, but that's just a part of the Hitman series. So having something normal and having that being the redeeming feature of a game, that's not very good. And I also bought Dishonored, and then I booted it up, but I don't like steampunk, so I closed it. But I will play it at some point. I will play it at some point. I just have been playing something else, which I think Thurb might be interested in, because you like Arma 3rd, right?
Yes, I like Arma 3rd.
Arma 3rd?
Thurb? Arma Thurb?
Yeah.
Well, regardless, do you also like Battlefield 2?
I like Battlefield...
Project Reality, specifically?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
What is that?
So, Project Reality has been a mod that's been in development for something like 6 years in the game, old game of Battlefield 2 that is almost 10 years old by like 2 years or something like that. And basically what it is, it's a full conversion of the game of Battlefield 2 into a realistic military simulator. And while that doesn't sound interesting to basically everyone. It doesn't seem very interesting, but it actually is an exciting game where it's the kind of game where if you're just patrolling an empty just parking lot or just a desert for about 15 minutes and you get shot at one time, it is still extremely exciting. It's one of those games where it's all about the atmosphere, and even though the game looks ugly as shit because it's on a really, really old engine, you still have a very good atmosphere of when you're getting shot at, and there's always a sense of danger at every corner, and it's a game that really encourages team plays. So in Arma, I found whenever you join a random multiplayer server, you don't really work as a team with the people in the server, but Project Reality has like a mumble thing built in, so the second you join a server, you'll join into their mumble server, you'll be in constant local chat or squad voice chat with your teammates, and it always creates some sort of random team dynamic despite the fact that you're not really as invested into a game as if you were playing with the community. I found myself like doing more tactical things with these random people I just started playing with suddenly than I had ever done with like a group of people I ever knew, because it's sort of that sort of game that pushes you to work together and, you know, watch every corner. And also, if you're a guy who likes shooting people, it's probably not the game for you, because the suppression system is so crazy that if you're just getting shot around you, you literally can't see where you're shooting. So it always encourages you to take cover, it makes you play tactically, and it's actually a great all-round game. If you have Battlefield 2, whether on Steam, Origin, or on disc, you just need the base version updated to 1.5, and then download Project Reality. That's all you need, and it is an exciting experience, and you probably won't regret it.
Now, a question for you that will assist people wanting to, like, my problem whenever I, like, people tell me, like, a mod of a game, is 1.5, I think you said, is that the latest version?
That is the latest version of the
game. Okay. Because, like, it's this is a really fun mod, but you have to do, like, something that is a 3-month-old
version. That's weird. I don't know why people would ever do that. This is the sort of mod that's constantly being updated, but okay. Battlefield 2 is not, so you don't really have to worry about catching up to Battlefield 2 updates. I will say, though, if you have the CD version of Battlefield and you're trying to install it, you do have to install the 1.41 patch before installing the 1.5 patch, which is pretty dumb, but you should do that because it will tell you have a patch that's too new for the game or something like that. So do install 1.41. Okay. Everyone should check it out. It's 6 gigabytes, so it's basically a total overhaul, and it's hard to find a game experience like that. In fact, I'd argue it's a better simulator, like a mil sim, than Arma. I found it more enjoyable.
Ooh, big words. Big words. Well,
a lot of people who've played Project Reality before they've played Arma, I guess. So it's more, it might be rose-colored glasses, but it has 100 player servers. It's really populated, so I think there's, you know, you'll find a bunch of full 100-player servers at the moment. So it's constantly being played. There's co-op modes, and the bots aren't shit because you can get shot in 3 hits, and the bots actually work quite tactically, and it's quite surprising. So if you're interested in giving the military simulator genre a try, it's a lot more easier to get into than Arma. So if you have Battlefield 2 and you're interested into some sort of, not even necessarily a hardcore military experience, you just want something that's different from the regular first-person shooter, I highly recommend everyone try it.
So what are the controls like? Are they as weird as Armor?
It's like Battlefield 2.
I would assume they're Battlefield controls.
Yeah, they're Battlefield controls, basically.
Okay, cool. So that's kind of what ruins Armor for me.
Yeah,
that's my biggest barrier to entry to Armor, exactly. is the controls.
It just, you have prone, and then you have team chat, and everything's just the WASD. Everything's a similar thing. So as long as you have some sort of basic grasp on the Battlefield 2 system, it's not too big of a leap forward. That said, now, if you're going to try to play it like Battlefield 2, you will die.
Question, does this still have like commander mode and stuff in it?
Yes, it does have a commander mode, okay. But it's taken out a lot of the things. For example, there's no artillery or mortars and things like that anymore because it was too easy to spam. And things are more realistic in that you can't just drive a helicopter as a soldier. You have to get a helicopter crewman or a pilot kit. Or if you want to drive a tank, you need a crewman kit. So it forces people to specialize. But at the same time, it doesn't do it as it's a really difficult thing to do. But instead, like, so you're not just taking a helicopter by yourself and then landing it somewhere on the map and fighting. There's a bunch of different game modes like Insurgency, Advanced and Secure and things like that, and it's very interesting, and I highly recommend everyone check it out. It's very fun. Project Reality.
He said that like,
very cool.
Sure.
Yeah, I want more people to play it because freaking people are too lazy to install Battlefield 2 and then download this, which is understandable, but if you have it on Steam, then definitely give it a try.
Battlefield 2 even on Steam?
Yeah, I ended up buying it again on Steam because I don't, because the assholes put the CD key on the back of the manual. I don't keep the manual in the box, so I don't know where that manual is.
So it's, again, Steam wins because of the ease of access. And
exactly.
Just, like,
and it's
services.
Like, internet. I don't even think you can register on Origin. So EA, despite it being like a total EA game, fucks you over like that. So just buy it on Steam.
It's on Steam. Huh. Games.
So, okay, there's one game in particular that I want you to talk about. I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I want you to talk about it. What else have you been playing this week?
Hearts of Iron 3?
No, it's not it.
You have to tell me. I can't.
Starts with a D, ends in Oda 2.
Dota 2?
Oh, God. Yeah, I saw you playing that.
Playing Dota 2. What the heck?
Well, I've
It's
I've,
a good game. Why wouldn't
played,
you play it?
Yeah, I played the original Dota for a bit, and I played a lot of Heroes of New Earth. And
you want to know why I don't think you would be playing it? Because it's too mainstream of a game for noob.
It is too mainstream of a game for me. That's it. It does make me sort of sick to the stomach when I try to play it because, but for all the mainstream it is, it's fucking hard to find people to play with. You can be sitting in a queue to find a game for like 10 minutes. It's ridiculous. That said, I mean, it's extremely refined. I like the experience very much because it's very you know, it's not rough around the edges. It's been refined to the very bone. Solid game. That's all I can say at the moment. Like, the community is still shit, but I think that goes for all MOMAs. It's not as bad as, like, the original Dota All-Stars community or the Heroes and New Earth community, but I don't know. It's okay. I don't think I hate it as much as I thought I would, because it's basically the same game as every MOBA game.
So TI3 is going on right now, and it's really entertaining to watch.
Yes, a lot of people have been watching the TI3. Have you been watching it, Shinbai?
I have been watching TI3 today, mostly.
Can you guys say what the TI3 is for listeners who don't know?
The International 3.
The International 3. It is the Dota gaming competition, and I forget what the prize is. Is it like
the prize pool is total $2.8 million. Yeah. Half of that goes to the winner, then the rest is split up amongst the rest of the top 8 or 10 or whatever.
So like this is essentially like Valve's tournament. Like people have like their own Dota 2 tournaments and whatnot, but this is the Valve one.
This is the Valve hosted one. Teams fly out to Seattle or are flown out to Seattle.
And I think the most ingenious thing about how Valve does it is the players pay for the prize pool by like buying tickets to watch.
Yeah, well, like they put up $1 million initially, because that's been the prize pool the last few years, and they were selling the compendium, which was a little $10 book that you get that gives you a special like in-game courier. And then access to like watch the tournament and a whole bunch of other little neat things here and there. Like it allows you to, I don't know, this is probably a bit of a stretch for at least what I know of our audience is on like ESPN's website and like MLB.com and stuff like that. They have things where it'll pick like a random sporting event from that day and it'll be like, oh, do you think this team is going to win by more or less than 3? Stuff like that, and they've added stuff like that for the matches in the international.
Wow. And how it works is like there's odds, so basically you can bet through items. So if you bet in like a rare item, you can, if your odds are good enough, you can win like a super rare item if it's like last year's. So it's really cool. I love how Valve does these things.
Also, you can hook your Steam account into Twitch. I'm not sure about the specifics of this, but you can like sync your Steam account and your Twitch account. So, like, while watching the international, you can get, like, Dota 2 drops or something. It's really weird.
Yeah. But it's a great way to encourage people to give a shit about esports. I think it's a fantastic way to...
Yeah, because we were talking about this before earlier in the day on our Guild Mumble, and we were talking about how someone was like, oh, the mobile bubble has to burst eventually, right?
Right.
And I was like, I don't know, because I could see a league sort of going, it's, you know, dying a natural death years from now. But Dota has the marketing of Valve behind it.
Right.
So I don't know. It's going to be here for a while.
It just gives so many options for the player outside of the game to get involved by buying things, trading things on the market. There's all this infrastructure built around it. I doubt it's going to fall or even burst something like that, especially if Valve's doing it. I agree. Yeah.
Are there any games? I guess that's, you want to talk about Hearts of Iron 3? You talked about it before, I believe.
Oh, you want me to talk about it? I've been naming.
No, Shinboy.
Wait, just one thing. This game has turned me into the point where I've spent the last 3 hours just naming my divisions, just giving them names.
Talk to me in like a month and change, and then I'll be talking about naming divisions as well, but in a different game.
Oh, what game?
You know exactly what game I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know what game you're talking about. That took a bit.
What happened? What?
Rome Total War 2 or Rome 2 Total
War 2. Oh, nice. Okay, yeah.
Beginning of next month. Get excited.
Yep. Get hype.
We will save that conversation for them then.
They announced that you can name units and stuff, I think.
That's kind of awesome. Shinboy, what games that Valve may or may not make have you been playing?
I have not been playing any Valve games. Dern and I finished Saints Row the Third today in preparation for Saints Row 4. That game is really dumb.
Yes, it is. There's a couple of people I would love to play like a co-op with. Prior to like Saints Row the Fourth or what have you, but can you explain like just how the co-op works and your experiences with the game, if possible?
The co-op is pretty simple. It's, if you've ever played Borderlands co-op, it's kind of similar where except it's only two people, where one person is the host, so their story progress is what's tracked and all of that. I don't know. It's basically just drop in, drop out co-op for the entire game.
So the other person, does the other person get like skill ups and all that as well?
You still get money. You still get your rep or whatever it's called.
Okay.
So
you're still, effectively, like two people can just do one co-op play all the way through, and there won't be any hindrances on either side.
Correct. That's what I'm planning to do with a friend of mine for Saints Row 4. Is we're just going to co-op the whole thing.
Nice.
I hope it doesn't because it seems like they're just trying to top it in dumbness every iteration, and I'm happy they're ending it with 4 and not trying to make it even crazier with 5. You think four is going to be too ridiculous? Shouldn't we?
I don't know.
I feel like it's Jeff, like, pretty much hit the hammer on the nail
on the head.
Yeah.
Nail on the head.
However that expression goes, Jeff got it right with saying that if they keep this going, they're going to become, like, almost too self-aware with the amount of dumbness they will generate. Mm-hmm. And I think stopping at four is probably the best thing, because otherwise it's just going to get...
I like the way they're doing the dumb stuff, the way they're doing their in-jokes. Like, your average person is not going to get why it's funny that it's Vice President Keith David. But if you get that, it's fucking hilarious. Like, it's so funny.
I still love this Vice President Keith David.
That's what I mean. To you and to me, it's really, really funny, but most people won't even get it.
Mm.
And also, like, how the seventh voice is just labeled Nolan North. Most people won't get that, but I think that type of humor is great. As for the in-game...
President is too crazy for me. President of the United States.
No. President of the United Saints.
Okay.
That's actually what it is.
Country has also changed to the United Saints of America.
Once you became president, you changed the name. At least that's what I assume happened.
It's crazy.
I'm sad that it wasn't the presidential campaign. I don't know.
I mean, it's...
I don't know.
That's, like, a multi-year game coming out in, like, trying to time it with a four-year cycle of presidential campaign. Like, it would be amazing if they did that, yes.
Oh, man. That would be so good. Especially as an outsider who doesn't really understand the process. They could just tell me whatever, and I just go, yeah,
you know,
sure.
The process is you vote for dudes. That's how it works.
No, what the process is,
that simple.
You do a series of mini-games, and you get tokens... And then you put them in a jar or a giant urn or something.
If you kill anything in the world, the tokens have a chance to drop.
Yeah, if you kill people, you can get tokens off them.
So basically the way it works in America is if you kill someone, you steal their vote. You can vote again.
Yeah, like
1 million votes.
Oh, fuck.
I went out to Oregon and killed Thurb, I could vote for him in his stead.
Right. That's great.
Vote Quizzy.
That would be hilarious. They have, like, these families of people who have, like passed down votes to generations. So these, like, families with millions of votes of just dead people. They just have.
You gotta combo it with that night from The Purge where there's no laws. You can just kill as many people as you want and steal all the votes.
All right. Any other games you've been playing, Shimboy?
I've been messing around with Metroid Prime, like, the very beginning of it. So there's that.
How? How are you playing it?
Yeah, what antics involve messing around?
Well, like, I started it because I had never played Metroid Prime.
But is this... So you have a GameCube? Is it GameCube?
I have a Wii.
Oh.
I'm just playing it on the Wii.
Okay.
I have a Wii set up downstairs, and I just borrowed the controller and the game. I was going to emulate it until I started reading up on it, because, like, things in Dolphin look amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Until I realized that the biggest problem with Metroid Prime, which apparently is like a running problem in a lot of Dolphin emulations, is you have a lot of sound issues where, say you like go to a save station or something, once you're out of the save station, you have just now lost all in-game sound until you restart the game.
That sucks.
So, like, you know, you reload the emulator, which I don't feel like dealing with that.
Yeah. I don't think that's worth it either.
No, it's not. Know.
But is the game, this is your first Metroid game, or is this?
No, Metroid for me is sort of an anomaly where I hate, if I look at the systems individually, I hate them all. Like, I don't really like collecting things in games. I don't really like games where it's easy to get lost, but the Metroid franchise is one of my favorite franchises.
That's weird. Wait, this is your first time playing Prime?
Yep. I never had a GameCube.
Right.
So I've played a good chunk of Super Metroid, and then I played Fusion and Zero Mission on the GBA.
Man. Okay.
What do you mean, right. Oh man?
I remembered what's that Metroid where Samus is outside her suit for like half of it or some shit?
That's
I thought that was Fusion, but I'm probably wrong.
I don't think so. Fusion is the one with the X parasites where it fuses with the suit. And there's
you're expecting Fusion. Too much Metroid knowledge from me.
Fusion is one of my favorite games.
I just sworn I read somewhere like Samus is supposed to weigh like 200 kilograms and she's like 7 foot something.
I don't know.
What?
She's a crazy bounty hunter, so there's that.
Yeah.
Could have sworn I read that somewhere.
Maybe
wasn't she also raised by like birds?
I don't know. I know there are space pirates. I know there are.
Okay. According to the Super Metroid Player's Guide, she's a strong, muscular woman who's 6'3" and weighs 198 pounds without her armor.
Okay.
Wow.
That's
anyway.
All right.
I know there are missile packs. I know there are morph balls. I know there's Ridley. This is about the extent of my knowledge of the Metroid lore. That and Mother Brain.
So you're experimenting with Metroid Prime.
Yeah, I was like, I really like these other Metroid games that I've played. Maybe I should play Metroid Prime because it like is super different, but I'll probably still like it.
That sounds like Lara Croft finds you experimenting with Metroid Prime. How dare you?
Exactly. I mean, I'm still like partially through Tomb Raider as well, so there's that.
Oh god.
You haven't beat that game yet?
No. Come on now. I take forever to beat games.
Just wait till the ending. You're gonna facepalm.
I expect to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, everyone should know by now my feelings on first-person games with a controller, and I actually don't mind it in Metroid Prime because the lock-on is actually really well done, except for the fact that the controller sucks for it. That's not really the game's fault. That's Nintendo's fault.
I was going to say fuck the GameCube control, but it's not a bad control. I don't mind the GameCube controller.
It's really... the buttons feel good enough. It's just that with the size of the controller, where the like L button rests is sort of like not even on my fingertip like it would be like a trigger. It's sort of like near the where the finger meets like the rest of my hand.
Yeah, so it's really hurts. Low.
It hurts after a while when you're constantly pressing L over and over to lock onto things.
Yeah.
I just love the breed of people who are totally into Nintendo. Because God bless them. Like I don't understand it.
No,
but
no, panic. Those people.
I'm sure Durin's ears are burning right now.
Yeah. Yeah, but what's his face? I was just gonna say I love the people. I also love the people, and God bless the people who think the latest Tomb Raider is the best game ever made. Because I need to know why. I need to know what the fuck that game does. In
you
the ending.
That you want to know why I like Metroid so much?
Well, Metroid's supposedly a storied and excellent franchise, even though I'm not a Nintendo guy. I can respect that. But Lara Croft, I don't know.
Every other Nintendo franchise, though, which is why I like it.
I always thought you were a Nintendo guy, Cynic.
What?
No, Cynic's a Sony guy.
Yeah, but Nintendo guys, and you play
Team
Nintendo
Cerny over here.
I don't know. I kind of ended up a Sony guy, but I like it for the games more than... Whatever. Let's not get into console wars bullshit. Anything else? Is that what have you been doing, Shinboy, outside of games?
I've been working a lot. Just kind of boring, and no one wants to hear about it. So,
okay. Rather than working, what is this? Could you give a little bit of a teaser sampler about what's going on next week that will
Well, before that though, there is something other gaming related that doesn't involve playing games. My grand 3DS adventure.
All right.
Oh, shit. Yes. All right. Let's do this.
Okay. I've been going back and forth on getting a 3DS since about February.
Yeah, same.
And with Pokemon XXX and YYY coming out in October, I think it is. It's like a Saturday in October. I figured I should probably get one of those things before the game comes out. Plus with like Fire Emblem and Animal Crossing, there's other games to play in the meantime.
Right.
So there were rumors floating around of a all black XL. Coming out.
Yeah. But you may or may not have heard now.
Confirmed. Oh, I'm getting that.
Yeah.
So I was waiting to see if and when they're going to announce that thing coming to the US. Because that's apparently been out in Japan for a while. I don't really know. But they're all region locked, so it doesn't matter anyway. But this past weekend, about a week ago, at Best Buy, the 3DS XLs were on sale for $170 when they're normally $200.
Right.
So I bought a blue one. And it's just sitting
like done,
unopened. So when I bought it the 11th of August, which is when they confirmed the black one is coming out in North America, it'd be the last day in my return window, I'm pretty sure, for that blue one. Wow. I'm going to storm into that Best Buy and be like, yo, I'm trading this blue one for a black one, and you better give me that sale price on it or I'm going to be pissed.
That sounds shady, Shinboy.
Wait, can you get the sale price on it?
I don't know. I'm going to yell at the manager until he gives me the sale price, though.
Yeah, those guys are... They do seem to bend over backwards as long as they get the thing, don't they?
Yeah, no, the secret of retail is if you yell a bunch, they will do what you want. Yeah.
Because I'm just be like, if I'm going to get it for the regular price, what motivation do I have to get it here?
Right.
Man, so your 3DS adventure is... So essentially, it's just you want a different color than the one you got. This is the worst adventure ever.
The all black one is awesome.
See, I hope we have just GPS like adventure. One blind podcast listener who's just like, why? What is the point of color?
I just like my keyboard, mouse pad, PS3, PS2, phone, computer tower, and even my car are all black. So I need a black 3DS.
So I would call you boring for that.
No, because black goes with anything.
Yeah, black is the it color. It works with everything, doesn't it?
Yep.
See, my 3DS venture was like, so
wearing a black shirt right now.
Shin Megami Tensei 4 still hasn't come out here, and some sites say TBD 2013 or end of 2013, and some even say 2014 for that game, which made me realize that region locking is possibly the single worst thing in the fucking world.
If you live in Australia.
Yeah, no, or no. PAL regions. Like just all of Europe is fucked by the same stick.
No, in general, because otherwise they're having special Pokemon X and Y limited edition 3DS XLs that are coming out in just Japan, and I want one. But yeah. It'd be region locked if I were to get it.
It's just bullshit. So I seeing that maybe realized that if that's happening for Shin Megami Tensei 4, then it's probably going to happen with Ace Attorney Dual Destinies, which is the number one game I'm looking forward to this year outside of like the games I've already passed and the stuff on PlayStation 4. But actually, I might actually want that game more than I do a PlayStation 4 right now. I just really like Ace Attorney. Fuck you.
So that's going to push back a console purchase?
Well, I've already bought the console. It's already on pre-order.
So your console already paid off.
Yeah, it's already paid off. So.
You didn't pre-order it. You pre-purchased it.
Yeah. So it's already there. But I know that, well, console is only as good as its games. And, like, I can't see any game that's coming out on that console this year because it's freaking Infamous. It looks amazing. That's not this year. So I can't think of anything in that console this year that makes me more excited than freaking Ace Attorney Dual Destinies. But I don't know when if that game is going to come to Australia, because people don't know. That game was like, they were like, oh, we don't think it'll sell very well in the States. Because it won't. So we're going to release it digital only in the States, which means that it's like even worse for PAL regions.
Destiny is coming out on the new consoles as well, right? Old and new?
Apparently it's... Oh yeah, never mind. Yeah, old and new.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you'd get that on PC. Oh, wait, Destiny. That's
it's
on PC.
Not, I don't think it's coming out on PC. Yeah.
That game is coming out on PC. Let's be real here.
It needs to be coming out on PC. I agree, but like how long after will they release
it? That'd be a death sentence for that game. It's like, to come out on PC with the money they spent on it. It'd be death sentence for it to not come out on the personal computer.
No, that's correct. Don't be crazy. Halo sells shitloads on consoles. Console games sell shitloads.
But have you seen like some of the reports of how much money they're pouring into that thing? A 700 team?
The 10-year development cycle?
Yeah.
It's crazy. But that's not this year, though, isn't it? That's next year, isn't it?
Next year.
Destiny? Yeah. So, yeah, nothing else. So that game is barely come out in the States, and so it might not even come to Europe at all, which means I'm, for the first time ever, considering an import console to be my primary console. Because I've had, like, an import PSP and a normal PSP, right? I've done that before, but I usually use, like, the local version for obvious reasons as my primary. Even though games cost more here, I can import from the UK or something like that, and still play PAL games for relatively low prices on my console. But I'm actually considering having a US 3DS as my primary 3D, or only 3DS, possibly. So it's crazy because like the things you have to do that is, like, for example, DS is a pretty good thing of like pretty much every game comes out in the eShop on day one. So I can buy digital points cards from like PlayAsia, and use that, and they just email you the code, and you just enter that into the 3DS, and then you can use that for games. But the problem there is PlayAsia, which is like one of the only places that do this that I can see, charges like $58 for a $50 points card, and Australia's like dollar has gone down, so that's like $64 Australian for a DS, like for essentially a DS game, because it's like a $50 card. Games cost $50, so I'm paying $64 for a game, which is pretty much the same price as local games. So I don't know if it's a smart decision or not to go for an import, because you lose warranty. You obviously you can't get bargain bin stuff, because like half the games I buy are just like, oh, that's in the bargain bin, may as well pick that up, it's like $10 now. But you can't do that because it's import only. So I don't know. I really want Nintendo to go region free, but I don't think they're going to do it.
Can't you do that thing where they do like the R4 memory cards or whatever it's called?
It hasn't been cracked yet.
It hasn't been cracked yet. Okay.
Yeah. You can get R4 working for DS games on the 3DS, but you can't get 3DS games.
If I was more frivolous with my money and had more of it to mess around with, I would get one of those Pokemon 3DSs imported, because they confirmed, I'm pretty sure, that X and Y will have all language options in all versions of the game.
Oh, man. But not all games will be. Like Shin Megami Tensei 4, for example, I don't think the...
So I mean, no, I mean, what I meant by that was meant that 3DS would be just my Pokemon 3DS, and that's it. That's what I meant by frivolous.
Well, I mean, like, Street Passing occasionally, like, for packs and whatnot, too, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, I would have another 3DS for other 3DS games.
Oh, wow.
Frivolous.
It's possible that if I wait, like, 3 or 4 years, then I could get an R4 equivalent for the 3DS that'll just play 3DS games, and then I can just do shit that way. But I don't want to pirate. I just want freaking my games to work, and I just want to own them and play them. So I might have to freaking do the crazy online only, like digital only 3DS, US 3DS. And then some dude had a 3DS for like his US 3DS for $75 Australian on eBay. And I was so close to buying it because, oh my God. But it was sky blue.
I know someone. Nope. Maybe. I'll talk to you after the show.
Okay, awesome. Because I'm kind of interested. The red sounds cool, but I don't know about that blue. I don't know. I don't know, man. Especially since we have the gray and black one here.
I don't know. Do you plan on bringing it outside of the house?
No, but I still like my electronics to look good, you know? Yeah.
Exactly, like, why I'm going for the all-black 3DS.
Yeah, that's probably going to be the best-looking 3DS. Is it matte black or is it shiny black? That's the big question.
It really doesn't matter. Matte black would be preferred, but...
My matte black DSi is one of my favorite-looking things on my desk. It looks awesome.
Gee, let me check. It's in a commercial. I could just watch that commercial.
On the subject of mats, while he's looking that up, I guess.
Yes?
Mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys, but for like
no one realizes that.
For my mouse, when I like, especially for like shooters and whatnot, I sometimes like to, like, I have the sensitivity really low.
Mm-hmm.
But right, to counter that, I have a giant mouse pad that is actually a game pad for, like the trading card games.
Nice. Okay. All right.
So that is a big mouse pad.
I don't use all of it, but it allows me free roam of moving around, and it's nice. It's a comfortable surface. What are, like, do you guys just use standard mouse pads, or? Because, like, we've had the discussion with Durin and Cynic and all that going back and forth on, like, mice and gaming interface, but what about pads?
I have that SteelSeries, was it QCK one? It's, like, it's a quote-unquote gaming mouse pad, but it's still only, like, $10, so it's not super expensive.
Right.
And it works pretty well. It's pretty big, too.
It's, like, it's about the size of, like, a dinner plate or something, right?
It's a little bit bigger.
So what DPIs do you guys generally use? What are we talking about?
Let me check.
Let's just go through the list. Everyone turns acceleration off, right? That's basics.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yes.
Obviously. Noob, I assume, because you might be crazy. I don't know.
No, I don't turn on acceleration because I don't know what it does. So I use the default thing and I just turn it off because I'm scared. Okay.
Do you guys set Windows to minimum speed and your mouse to maximum speed, or you just keep Windows on default?
I leave Windows at default and then mess with the DPI and the mouse software settings.
Okay, same. All right. So we're all on the same page so far.
Okay.
So what DPI do you actually use?
in general, Windows and games that like are not shooters, I usually am around 2,000 to 2,200.
Okay. Noob?
3,500.
Okay.
That's really sensitive.
That is
right. Thurbleton? What are we talking here? What do you actually use? You use a big mouse pad? What's happening here with you?
I use a big mouse pad. When it comes to shooters, I usually scale it down to like 1.0 or something.
Holy See, I'm the opposite shit. For you. I have to go high for shooters unless
yeah,
I'm
I have
sniping.
To go high for shooters.
Well, see, then like, and there are mice people have made that are complement that of like the two different buttons. So like,
yeah, I think the Rat 7 has one of those.
And
on my Naga, you can set one of the buttons on the side to change the DPI, and you can set it as a toggle or as a hold. So it's like a sniper mode button.
That's pretty
especially
cool.
Especially for something like a real-time strategy game, I do use a higher, what is it called?
DPI. Fuck all you guys.
Sensitivity.
On normal Windows, I'm at 5600, and in games, I'm at 4600.
5600?
5600 is so high. Holy shit.
Yep, and in normal games, I'm at 4600.
My mouse only goes up to 5600.
That's we have the same mouse. Yes, I use the max.
This is a value thing you guys are using that I'm not using. I'm not sure where to look up DPI.
Dots per inch.
Well, I know it's.
It's in your actual mouse settings, not your Windows settings, sadly. But yeah, no, I keep mine at absolute max. In shooters, I maybe turn it down to 3600. But
are you very good at?
Because normally, if I'm playing a shooter, I turn it up to like 3600.
I have 3500 for everything.
Yeah.
Basically.
That's around the right spot for shooters because you're moving at the right speed and it doesn't feel too swimmy and stuff. But for actual, like, I need to move from one side of one monitor to the other side of the other monitor without moving my wrist.
Right.
So that's why it's so high.
Because the thing about shooters is even if you have a high DPI, once you're used to it, you're still able to be accurate. If it's too low, it's too much of a hassle to get my
mouse.
Unless
you're like Thurbleton. Like, if you like freaking a 10-meter wide mouse pad and just
If you have destroyed your hands with like about like 8 to 10 years of rock climbing and don't have the ability to nudge it ever so slightly, just go with the full screen and sit on the edge of your seat because it's that exciting.
Cynic, looking at these images, it doesn't look like it's a straight glossy black, but it doesn't look like it's a matte black. Looks like it's similar to the interior of the 3DS where it's got some reflectiveness to it.
Okay. Oh, that sounds really good. That's in like October, right?
What? No, that's coming out here in like a week.
Oh shit! I might import that. Oh fuck. Oh god! I don't think I shouldn't. I shouldn't spend that much money on that console.
I linked an image,
but I probably will. Oh fuck. So we're saying, is there anything else you've been? Oh, it does look.
We've transitioned to what you've been playing, Cynic.
Yeah. Are we? What I'm? That looks so.
I've been playing.
I really want this Black 3DS.
About your Shin Megami, whatever.
I haven't been playing Shin Megami Tensei, but
you've been talking about importing things.
Yeah, so I've been playing a bunch of games.
Importing Japanese figurines.
Oh god, have you done that yet? Did you finally crack?
Every time I think about it, I either have to go into a store full of people who import or buy Japanese figurines. Not what I want to do, because I already feel uncomfortable walking into like an EB Games or a GameStop. And secondly, I have people over at my house, and it's just, I don't want to,
No? Alright. Cynic, anything you've been up to?
I've been
trying to keep this podcast moving.
Okay, what do you want me to talk about first? I've been playing Dragon Age 2, The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing, Rogue Legacy, and Might and Magic: Last of the Heroes.
Van Helsing, I'm interested because you told
me. All right, so Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing it's like someone went, hey, you know that D3 thing? It's not enough like D2, so let's just make a fucking D2 game. Like, let's just do that again. They kind of did it, and they kind of didn't at the same time. So the main problem I have with that game is the max level cap is 30.
What?
It's actually a pretty short game. Like, it's only supposed to be like I'd only played about like a third of it, and then stopped. But I'd say, like, guessing it's probably the length of maybe the first two acts of D2. It doesn't span the whole like length. So you're probably hitting max level like halfway through the last part of that game and then staying at max level for the rest of it. And the problem that translates to is like, you kind of, with that few skill points and stuff, you kind of have your build in mind from the time you start, and then just there's no reason to diversify or change it by the end because it's only 30 levels. And like in D2, some of the cool stuff is like, for example, if you're saving up to do something specific, you might have to play like the first third of the game entirely differently than you'd be playing the last third of the game because you've been saving up skill points and that kind of stuff for later, right? So you don't really have that effect with Van Helsing. And so, but aside from that, it's just the art style is good. The world is pretty fun and natural. Not natural, but it's dark and gritty in a really cool way. And so I don't know. It is really fun. I really like that game. If I hadn't played Torchlight like 3 weeks ago, I would have probably finished it. It is pretty, pretty exciting. I don't know. Noob, like what would be required for you to play it?
A higher level cap.
I had.
That's literally 30. I mean, what is the rate of leveling? That's my question.
I got like, so I played a third of it, and I know that because I was like 11, and that was about 6 to 7 hours.
So it's basically slightly faster or equal to the rate of Diablo 2 to get to that.
Yeah. Level. Yeah.
Oh, that's extremely short.
Yeah, and that's the sad thing.
I don't know if you know of the free-to-play Diablo Paths of Exile, but Mr. Wox has only been saying good things about it, and he's constantly pestering me to install it. So I'm thinking that might be
Diablo. I know a lot of people that swear by that game. I know a lot of people that fucking hate that game.
Yeah, it's like I've been told that it is the Diablo 2 game I want to play. And apparently it's not pay-to-win because everything, it's sort of like Guild Wars where it's cosmetic, all of the pay-to-buy items. And like that's genuinely what I buy in those games, so that they might have hooked me by the balls there.
Yeah, we might need to play that in November. Like when you next feel like playing one of those kinds of games.
For playing if it was like that free to play game, because I've been told by Mr. Wox to play it for a really long time. It does seem quite Diablo esque. That does seem
because it does. Like Van Helsing does so much right. Like it feels good. The sound effects good. Like the world is. I'd say it's a little bit deeper than Torchlight. It's not too much deeper, but it's basing itself off like established fiction, like the Van Helsing fiction.
I was going to say, do you feel like the established fiction holds it back or is a help to it?
It helps because it requires less like, because you kind of know. It's like this is England with monsters. Like that's essentially all you need to know, and everything else just plays upon those expectations. So you don't need the whole like world building and all like the obscure lore that can really drag those kinds of games down. So like from the perspective of someone who likes lore in games, it's there because obviously it's works off the fiction. But also from the perspective of someone who like doesn't give a shit about the lore and storytelling stuff, but just wants to jump in and have fun, it's like that as well. Because the game itself doesn't need to say it because it's already there, so it's like kind of the best of both worlds. Right. I think that game has got a lot of promise. It's just I think it's the fact that there's so many games like that now probably drags it down. But I preferred it to Torchlight. Like I had more fun with that than I did with Torchlight.
I messed around with Torchlight for a little bit. It seemed pretty good.
It's comparatively, it's pretty simplistic. That compared to Van Helsing and D2, because there's so much more interdependence in D2, and Van Helsing borrows from that a lot. So there's a lot of interdependence in like how you build out your skill stuff. There's a lot of like prereqs and your skills and that kind of stuff. And there's Magic Find. Like a lot of that game is about Magic Find. So it's just really, it feels a lot like the older kind of
The problem is I just had trouble caring about things happening in like the story, the items I was picking up. Like I felt sort of apathetic to what was going on in the game, and it just didn't hook me. And
it's do you think a year or so down the line, like will there be a community that like makes some really awesome mod that does have a good story and all that? Because that's the big difference for Torchlight and
I don't. Are there mod tools that extensive? That game seriously,
I've never seen anything story related. I've seen skins and new classes in the original Torchlight, and it's sort of the same for the second Torchlight. So I have no idea. I don't think it's going to ever get to that sort of overhaul.
Not like Skyrim, where you're having one dude work on a crazy mod for a year.
Oh yeah,
in hopes that he gets a job at Bethesda.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a job application for Bethesda. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Yeah. I don't know, like, because the art style and stuff just really gets in the way for me.
I like the art style in Torchlight.
I can't take it seriously.
I'm not a fan of theirs.
See, I don't need to take it seriously.
Well, but that's what we're talking about, a story-based DLC, right? So, or a story-based mod. It needs,
that's not what we're talking about. I don't give a shit about story.
I like the story. It was simple, but you cared about the dialogue and the characters.
Yeah. Yeah. It was done such a minimal, like D2 did story in such a minimalist way, but
most importantly, you knew the reason why you were doing something in Torchlight. Yeah. I didn't know and I couldn't really care.
Yeah. And also like the crazy thing about Van Helsing is so much of it is voice acted, and the voice acting is pretty solid for the majority of it. Like the writing isn't necessarily the best, but the voice acting is there. So it unlike Torchlight, where you're kind of just like clicking through stuff for the majority of it, it kind of gives it that weight. Like you listen to it, like it's engaging in a way that Torchlight just
doesn't. I would expect that from a game that's like made off of an established franchise.
Yeah,
the lore.
Yeah. So but in the end, like there's no one playing that game online, so you need to play it with a friend. Like, in my opinion,
my point is with those types of games. If you prefer one or the other because it has better voice acting, I think you're looking at it the wrong way.
No, I think he's trying to say the overall atmosphere of the game.
Yeah, there's more to those games than just clicking on stuff because there's multiple games in the franchise. Yeah.
All right, exactly. So what's the other games you've been playing?
All right, let's go back to my list. We've got, wrong text file.
List.
Other text file. All right, so next game is either... File.
Come
Dragon
prepared.
Age 2, Rogue Legacy, or Might and Magic Clash of Heroes.
Dragon Age.
I don't know what that last one is, so let's go with that.
Might and Magic Clash. You probably do know what it is. You've just probably forgotten. It's like 4 years old or something. Yeah, but
is that the one with like the paladin looking dude in the cover, or is it the troll looking dude in the cover?
No, it's not. It's not a traditional Might and Magic game.
Oh.
It's, this is the one that was for mobile platforms in iOS, and it's actually my favorite game I played this week.
I actually don't know that game at all. I know the main Might and Magic game.
Clash of Heroes, you said?
Yeah, Clash of Heroes.
This doesn't look like a Might and Magic game.
Yeah, so it's a cartoony kind of art style. Like it's very reminiscent of Torchlight in the art style, even though this probably predates Torchlight. But it's essentially a turn-based... It's a mix between a turn-based art, like those Might and Magic games. It's kind of like a board. It's like a board game, mm-hmm. and there's two groups, and they clash against each other, right? This is kind of like that, but it mixes that with match three elements, and match four.
It's like a puzzle game?
It's kind of puzzly, but still kind of reminiscent of what Might and Magic's all about. It's about your armies clashing with the other guy's armies, but it's based on like everything you do, it, like a match game, when you do something with your stuff, they disappear. So you call in reinforcements, which kind of fills up your board
this
again.
This, to me, sounds like this is to Might and Magic what Star Jeweled is to StarCraft.
Possibly. Yeah,
like
possibly.
Which is a good thing, because I think Star Jeweled is my favorite part of StarCraft 2.
Yeah, it's quite possibly that. And so, like... It works out because it's got a plot. It's got voice. It's got a little bit of voice acting, but it's got a lot of like animated cutscenes. It's incredibly well put together. The weird thing about it is it's $22 on the PlayStation Store, $11 on the Steam Store, and $5.50 on iOS. And so I bought an iOS for my iPad. It works okay with touch. It probably works better with mouse, and probably even better with the controller. But you're walking around, you're battling dudes, there's random battles, but you can avoid the random battles, so you can do no random battles if you want to. There's like bounties, which is like exploring the world and finding people to fight, and you beat them and you get rewards, and it's got leveling up, but it's not too deep, so you're like there's five characters, and you play one character at a time as you go through the story, and I'm up to the second character now. And each character has an internal progression system, and your units have a max level cap of 5, and you get there after like 2 hours or so. So it's more about the skill and figuring out the actual gameplay and trying to get combinations. Like, you get rewarded for combinations by extra turns. And what that means is you have three things to do. other guys three things, you have three things, and so on and so forth. But if you like do a combination of stuff, like a Bejeweled, you get a bonus, but in this case, it's an extra turn. So if you match it such that three dudes in a row form a wall, three dudes in a column form an attack, and if you get the three dudes in a column, but they move forward to the front of the line, so if that pushes someone back and then creates a road, that road moves forward to become a wall, and that gives you an extra turn. There's stuff like that. So it's like very match three kind of elements to it that makes it really compelling. All the battles take like 5 minutes, but some of them can take up like 10 to 15 minutes, depending on how hard they are. It's actually really great. It's
this
really,
definitely
really
sounds
good.
Like Might and Magic. Like, this is to Might and Magic what Star Jeweled is to StarCraft.
Yeah. It is really, really good.
Do any
good.
Of you actually know what Star Jeweled is, though, just for reference?
I'm assuming it's... I'm going by inverse in this because it's Bejeweled, but with StarCraft stuff. Is that essentially
Yeah, because the way
about?
It works is it's a 2v2 match three. Mm-hmm. Like each individual person has their own board of jewels. And you match three, and every time you match three, you send out a marine and you gain a little energy. And you use that energy to spend on additional units. So it's a match three, but it still has the StarCraft thing of trying to pick units that counter your enemy's units and so on and so forth.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Yeah. So it's there's an actual BattleNet page for it. This actually looks really cool.
It's like,
this is kind of like that.
It's an official Blizzard. Like when they released the StarCraft II Arcade or whatever, it was like one of the two things that Blizzard put out.
It's kind of like that, but it's also kind of not, let's say, so in Star Jeweled, you're seeing like the people on the left and the jeweled on the right.
No,
but
I mean, like,
in,
they're similar things for their own franchises, was my point.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is kind of like combines this too. So you're actually working with people. But aside from that, it looks very similar because it's a lot of like similarities here. It's awesome. I loved it.
Sounds pretty good. Sounds like something I would play.
It's only $5.50 on iOS. So I'd recommend that people to pick it up. It's got a lot of fun. It's only got. Well, it's on everything. I think it's on Android as well. But like, it's people rate it like 3.5 stars, and it deserves way, way more. And the reviews on Metacritic are actually way, way higher. But the main thing is, there are some things in that game which require swipes, but it doesn't tell you it requires swipes. So some people get stuck in like the tutorial because they don't know how to move to the next screen, and it just turns out you swipe down. That
came out on Android about a month ago.
Yay, it's really good. All right, let's see. What are we talking about next? Dragon Age 2 or Rogue Legacy?
I'd just say we skip Dragon Age 2 altogether.
I think we should also skip Dragon Age 2 altogether.
That applies to both the game and talking about it.
Yeah, because I played, about 5 hours of that game, and I got sick of that game, and I put it down because it is not a BioWare quality product, in my opinion. So, let's move on.
I would argue that it is.
Mass Effect and Dragon Age 1 were awesome. I will fight you.
Actually,
on that
first story. Dragon Age is really awesome.
Knights of the Old Republic is a good game.
Moving on, what else have you been playing there, Cynic?
Rogue Legacy is
a game.
I'm not going to say it lives up to the hype. I'm not going to say that. I don't think it does, but that's just me. So have you guys played Rogue Legacy yet? Everyone's been playing Rogue Legacy.
No.
I have not played it, though. I have seen enough of it to know what it is.
I don't know what it is.
Same.
You don't know what it is? All right. So
I know what it is because someone told me to download it, but I never bothered to.
Okay. I'll explain it anyway. It's like a roguelite. It's like a platformer. It's a platformer game where it's... platforming action game where the dungeon that you go into is randomized each time you go in, and the enemy layouts and stuff are randomized as well. So like essentially every time you go into the dungeon, it's entirely different, but some things carry over. So like anything you find in the dungeon carries over to your next life. Anything you purchase before you go into the dungeon carries over onto the lives post that, and so on and so forth. What you get in the dungeon is essentially just gold and recipes for these things you can equip and create later, and that carries over. But every time you enter the dungeon, all your gold is taken from you. So essentially, you have the gold you've made in your previous run and whatever you discovered in your previous run, and you have to spend as much of that gold as you can because you have none of it going forward.
Why?
That's essentially... Well, it's to create its own economy. That's how the economy works in it. Because
what
is
the explanation for them taking all of the money you've earned?
Well, death stands there at the door. He's like, well, give me all your money. And you're like, fine.
Well, that way you can't just have shitty runs over and over and over to build up for something.
That's the point. Yes, that's the point. But I think that's also like, that's also that was a detractor for me as well. Because so I learned with Rogue Legacy that I'm really bad at that kind of game. Like, there's a couple of things that it does that I just don't, that I just doesn't click with me. So I'm normally pretty good at character action games. Like I'm pretty good at Devil May Cry, DMC, God of War. Those are fine. But this isn't that. It is far closer to like a bullet hell shooter. Like so people don't know that. That's essentially the ones where the entire screen is filled with like projectiles and enemies and shit, and you have to avoid everything, right? But what it doesn't have that those games do have, and what I think this should have had, is a kind of like an invincible zone. Like, for example, in a bullet hell shooter or like a side-scrolling shooter, you have your avatar, but only like the center of that needs to be hit for you to take any damage, right? So you can skirt close to stuff and still be relatively safe. But with Rogue Legacy, your outer like angle, like everything, your whole body is vulnerable. So if you are, for example, this is the major thing that happened to me for the first like 6 hours with that game, is if you're jumping up to an enemy and you swing, right? If your body touches the enemy's body, you get damage, and that knocks you out of your attack. So essentially, it's more punishing than those games are in like that specific way, which changes everything. Because instead of, for example, in other games, it's all about momentum. You're running around, you're jumping, you're killing, or you're flying around, you're shooting. But in this, you have to be very precise with your jumps, and you have to make sure you under jump, so you jump in front of an enemy instead of on top of an enemy, and so on and so forth. So it makes it like really different in terms of how it controls. And the way it compensates for that is it gives you pretty much, well, not perfect, but really good air control, and which does really help there. And it doesn't have a set jump height. You hit A and if you hold down A to jump, you jump higher or further. So it's very analog in that way. But in my opinion, that doesn't work as well as if it was just like designed from scratch to have a set jump height, give you a bit of leeway, and just be like more about being exacting and learning its like a simple base really well. Instead, it creates a more complicated base and expects you to adapt to it. Some people are really good at it. Like the only way to like measure how good you are at that game is to like how many deaths or generations in inverted commas did you go through to finish it? And some people are all the way down like 70, which to me is just spectacular, because I took like 178 deaths to get through that game. It was like 9 hours. And that was with cheating. Like, it got to the point in like the last, I beat the first, all four bosses, but it got to the last boss and I knew it was the last boss and I'd beaten everything else in the game. So I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to cheat and see what else is in here. Well, I can go into like the various things that can go that stop you and so on and so forth. But play the game for yourself. It's really fun. It controls pretty well.
You know how there's like four bosses or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to kill them all in one go, or say you kill one, like, is he still dead the next life?
Yeah, it carries over.
Okay, that's good.
And it's actually pretty cool, because like the castle has teleporters, and there's a teleporter before you enter a new zone, and there's a teleporter in front of the boss. And there's a unlock you can get which freezes the castle, which means the next time you go into the castle, it's the same as the previous time you went in. That same unlock, like, it has like negative effects to it, but that's the basics of it. So what you can do is use one life to find the boss door, and then you just do whatever the fuck you want to. And then you use your next life to freeze the castle, so everything's the same, go in, and just teleport straight to the boss door. Right? And so you can just retry the boss over and over again. That's kind of how that economy works out. So it's actually pretty, like, it's not too punishing in that way. You can, I beat my head against specific bosses for a while, but after a while, like, you kind of figure out a cheap way to do things. For example, there's one character called the Spell Sword, and what he does is he empowers spells. The spells in that game, one spell makes like a circle of fire around you. And if you have a spell sword, that spell is empowered. So you have like this giant circle of death around you. So one of the bosses is really hard. He splits every time you hit him. And you have to kill him entirely. So he splits like 8 times to smaller and smaller and smaller versions of himself. And you have to kill every single iteration of that. But if you have this spell, you can just run around him and your fire kills him.
That seems quite annoying.
Yeah, it was really annoying until I figured that out. And I hope people at home I helped by that use the spell sword with fire. That just broke that boss. Another boss was like, he flies around and he leaves fire trails behind him. And if you hit the fire trail again, like any other enemy in the game, you're knocked back and you take damage. And so I was dying over and over and over again, not by him, but by eventually, because of all the stuff that's going on in that room, finally hitting a part of his fire trail and dying. But there's a mage, that's the Archmage, and he has an ability called Time Stop. And if you have enough mana and enough damage on your sword, you can time stop that fight at the start of the fight and then just hit him until he dies. And he never had a chance to move. So there's stuff you can do in that game to break it, and it's really fun when you find them, because the game is like Dark Souls in that anything you can do, anything you can figure out to make that game easier for yourself, you should do. If you find Vampiric, like the best way of doing things is just fucking do it, because that game is hard enough that you feel proud when you beat stuff. So it's great. Like, it's really good. It's like $15 on Steam. I bought it from the developer's website. That gives you a Steam code and a non-Steam version as well. And I prefer doing it that way because I think they get a bigger cut that way. But it's pretty good. It's pretty fun. That's essentially it. That's what I've been playing this week. Rogue Legacy, which everyone's been playing.
Seems like a really good game, but not one that I would play at the moment.
Doesn't seem like a Dragon Age 2.
Dragon Age 2, man. That game was bad.
Yeah,
like it the weird things, like for example, cutscenes just weren't polished. Like you'd enter a area.
It was a Guild Wars cutscene.
Dude, there are some surprising equivalencies. Like your character's teleported to like the mid, like 10 feet forward, and he's suddenly in a conversation with this person you hadn't even seen while you were walking in, and they have this stupid conversation, and it's not even funny. Like there's different like facial expressions on your dialogue wheel that indicates what you're supposed to, like, what your character's trying to, like, act like. So I went for funny each one because I've been reading the Dresden Files. I wanted, like, a witty kind of character, and none of the things he said was funny. And the whole world, like, just was dreary, and it just clashed with itself. And I was like, why'd you even put it in
that option? And every level looks the same, and
I never even got far enough to even, like, realize that part, but yeah, it was just like the basics, like the RPG basics of having good dialogue, good cutscenes. That's the stuff it failed, and that was enough for me to go, fuck it. Knowing the other faults this has from reviews and stuff, I'm not putting more time into that game. So
yep, not worth it.
Not worth it. But I'm going to be watching At World's End or whatever it is today, so I'll be talking about that next week. That's the
movies
extent of
our video game podcast.
Woo! Is that it for the day?
Why I forgot about a game I ended up playing.
Woo!
Sleeping Dogs.
Okay, like one of the DLCs or just Sleeping Dogs?
I haven't played Sleeping Dogs before, and I was under the impression that you showed a lot of guns in that game, but you fight people, and I don't know how to use a controller properly, so I kept on dying on the first mission. So I sort of stopped playing that game. That's my report in about Sleeping Dogs.
Yeah, I think like that game. Like,
I don't know how to use a fucking controller, because it asks you to press the X button, but sometimes you have to press like the A button as well, and then you do something called countering moves, and I don't understand how that thing works. So I don't.
Sounds like you're bad at video games.
I don't know how to play with controllers. It just doesn't work. And of course, playing with a keyboard, that game. Don't ever try it.
I don't understand what's so hard about playing third-person like action games with a controller.
If there were, I don't know. I'm just not used to using a controller for fighting games because I don't play fighting games. So this was like a new experience for me. So I didn't really understand.
Oh, speaking of fighting games, I have a dumb idea that a couple of my friends are in on, which is I might as well share it so we can discuss its dumbness. So okay. Me and a couple people are considering dumping – Thurb, I talked to you about this briefly the other day – dumping potentially thousands of dollars, well, maybe $1,000 or $2,000, into building a custom dive kick cabinet.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've seen some features on building custom cabinets. They look pretty cool.
One friend of mine has like the PC pretty much all built. So we were talking about this, and we found a site that sells like legit ass buttons, and found like basically a PCB that you can wire them to that simulates keystrokes.
Do you have
like
a CRT monitor?
No. What we're gonna do Because it's not an old school game, so the CRT is not really needed.
Yeah.
Most old cabinets were fit for 27-inch CRTs, so 27-inch displays. So we were just like, those Korean 2560 by 1440 monitors are 27 inches.
Yes, they are.
So, yes, and a lot of those can be quote unquote overclocked to up the refresh rates.
That game is made for widescreen. So.
To up to 120 hertz. So we could potentially have 2560 by 1440, 120 frames per second dive kick.
Holy crap.
In an arcade cabinet?
That sounds pretty fun. That sounds pretty fun. I don't know.
This project might not be going on for a while, but it's in the beginning of its planning stages.
Man.
I feel like I should add that when I was at RTX and got to speak with Dave Lang and brought up like, hey, I really like this game. Like, do you plan on doing a cabinet or are you okay with people who decide to make cabinets? And he was like, yeah, we're fine.
They've released a high-res art pack recently that has a whole bunch of logos and stuff that are made to layer over top of them. They have one where it looks like the dojo level. And on top it says dive kick. And then bottom left, it says dive and bottom right, it says kick and like completely separated. It looks like it was meant so you can cut out circles and stick buttons in there.
Oh,
that's pretty cool.
So yeah, that's pretty cool. We'll do that.
Oh man. My problem with that is I need to play that game first. I haven't played it yet.
That game
so I don't
is
know
really
if I'm
fun.
Good at it. I don't.
I too got to talk to Dave Lang, and this was at PAX East, and that was the only game I went back to play a second time and a third time.
Man, yeah. So that would be really fun. If I was good at that game, I'd consider it. But I've played fighting games that I'm bad at, and it's just the worst.
I am really bad at fighting games. I hate fighting games. I love dive kick.
Yeah. I think that's an
understand
rule.
How simple that game is.
It's two
how
buttons.
How do you work out who owns the cabinet? Like who keeps the cabinet?
That's what we were trying to think. I think we're just going to go with whoever has room for it.
I mean, when it comes down to it, is after you make one, you can just make more.
Like, oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh god. Well, it's money, but like
connection.
Part of it is going to be super easy because it's just getting an extra board and doing some simple soldering. And then it works with the buttons, like no big deal.
No, like my issue is it's not like it's like what is the right combination to make a rig that is like the proper specs for the game? Like should I just get a whole tower or is this something I can just run like an Arduino? How much like how intensive
no,
is?
No, you're going to need a proper PC to run this, I would assume. Because you also have to think if you're running an Arduino, you need like a Windows machine with a Steam account running this.
Hmm.
So what we're going to do is we're going to set up, I guess you could call it a Smurf.
Oh, yeah. Does it have offline mode? It has to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's not always.
It has to.
But like the thing is, you're going to need something to keep it online just for Steam's purposes. So even like a super cheap like $10 USB dongle, stick it on the ports on directly on the motherboard and it'll be fine. So what we're going to do is probably set up a script to have a Smurf Steam account that literally just has nothing on it but Dive Kick. And then set a script on this machine that as soon as you press the big power button on the cabinet, it auto logs you into Windows, starts Steam, and starts the game.
Man, but at what point is it more efficient to just have PS3 in there with the game running? But you couldn't go to 120 hertz. I think that's the main.
No, you couldn't do it at the high resolution. You couldn't do it at 120 hertz.
Yeah.
It would be a pain in the ass to get two PS3
cheaper.
Controllers and not really because we already have all the PC parts.
Oh, okay. So you're just using like spare parts.
We had the computer that was in my apartment up at school. We're going to be using that.
Mm-hmm.
That we used as a media PC, which also had a 580 in it. Or now has a 580 in it.
Nice.
A 470 at the time.
Right.
So we'll be using that. So it'll be nice and quiet because I think the CPU in there has a custom, like one of the pre-built water loops on it.
Okay. Yeah.
So nice and quiet. Won't run too hot. And then we'll just set it up. Like that part, that's the easy part. The hard part is the actual cabinet.
Living with a cabinet. Like, at what point would you like put that in like a public area and let other people play it?
I have talked to the people at in Portland. There is a I want to say fairly well known bar. Well, I guess like bar arcade is I guess a good term.
You mean barcade?
Barcade, yes. called Ground Control, spelled with a K-R-O-N-T-O-L. But like I've asked them like do you like they apparently like shuffle in and out arcades and cabinets to like and pinball machines and whatnot to like basically refresh that. And it's like, do you guys plan on getting Dive Kick? Do you plan on having like it's and I'm sure if I made one and showed them how crazy this game is, they would be on board with it. Like local places, I think will probably incorporate it, but I'm not
because sure like I don't know, like one friend of mine definitely has room for it. Whether he would want it in his basement or not, it would be up to him. But aside from that, in terms of like you're talking about maybe bringing it somewhere and having like the quote unquote general public playing it.
Yeah.
I mean, if the place would allow it and they thought it was high enough quality to let me bring it there, sure, why not? Sounds like a fun idea.
Like, would you?
I'm imagining like next year, like this wouldn't be a thing you could do for 2013, but like 2014's like Big Life Live Show Live. So like me just driving down with a Dive Kick cabinet in the back of my car.
Damn straight. That would be pretty cool, right? Like I at some point you just have like a tip jar there. Right.
Quite extensively with blogs on giantbomb.com. Maybe something else that is in the works that I need to talk to Darren about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't not say it now. You have to say what's in the like what you're.
No, we can totally not say it. But it sounds like this works, right? This sounds like a good idea. It's just I'm worried about that game because I haven't played it myself. But I don't
that
know.
Game's really good.
I played it. It's fun.
Mm. Is it on? Because like, I played Street Fighter 4 for like a year. I don't know if I'd do the same with Dive Kick. Like I just don't know.
You don't realize you are overestimating the complexity of Dive Kick.
No, I mean, it's more along the lines of, do I have people to play it with? Will they be interested in that game for a longer period of time?
Doesn't matter. That's my point. Is that like, you can, like 3 years from now, be like, hey, I have people over. What's a dumb video game that anyone here can play? Hey, let's boot up Dive Kick because it has two buttons.
Man.
Anyone
can play it. That is a huge plus. I agree.
That's why I think it's like the perfect game for a cabinet like this, because I can have a group of people over while maybe only half the people there are into games and everyone can still enjoy Dive Kick.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to say that. That's bad. That's possibly sexist. I'm moving on.
What?
So, okay, what else have you guys been playing then?
Other than Japanese visual novels, sex creep games, nothing.
We already talked to... I guess Cynic. Is there anything else you've been playing? We've gone to Tsubu, to Shinboy, to Cynic.
Let's just make sure. I've just been rereading the Dresden Files, which continues to be amazing. But that's pretty much it. I don't know. Doubleton, what are you playing?
So I finished Feast for Crows, and that book is really slow and kind of a drag.
Oh no! Oh shit! Did you ever talk about the Guild Wars book?
I never finished it. That's why I didn't talk
about it. Oh, no.
No. It's entirely my fault.
Okay. All right.
Fuck. My book to read list is so big right now.
I guess we'll get a review of it either next week during the Shinboy's live show or...
You need to finish that for something. We need to science. Get a review of that
Next Lincoln cast, you'll finish it.
As the host.
I've been playing... Just a lot of the same stuff. I introduced a friend to Minecraft. God help me. But
at least it wasn't Terraria.
Yeah, I mean, like it was a fun game to play those. I've been playing around.
That's
with
my point. Minecraft
OBS.
Is a fun game.
I've been doing a lot of stuff that isn't playing games. I've been playing the normal stuff like Arma, Guild Wars 2, what have you. But finally tried out Open Broadcast Software. We've talked about a lot on the show and. It's nice for a lot of things, whereas the other major streaming thing, XSplit, is nice for other things. I guess I could go into depth, but this is more or less about video games, I guess.
Bullshit. No, what's the difference?
The primary difference is XSplit costs money. OBS does not. OBS is made by people who are just like, yeah, we'll put this out for free.
It's open source. Right.
Yeah. So you can play around with the code and all that. XSplit is a lot nicer for something like recording this show because anybody who decides to watch, we stream more or less every Friday or Saturday night, twitch.tv/Thurbleton for now. If we can get the Scotchcast or Lincolncast thing, we'll do it from there. Check the Twitter. But I like whenever we talk about something, I'll throw up either like an image about it or like it's very good for doing like what Vinny does on the live shows of playing around. For example, during the dive kick competition, there was a dive kick video playing. What it's not good for is it's very intensive on your computer, like in terms of processing power.
Maybe you shouldn't have such a shitty computer, Therb.
Maybe. I don't know. I need a better job in order to have a better computer to pay for said thing.
Whatever, you don't need food.
I should really
anyway, continue.
I should really eat something today. Anyway, OBS, or Open Broadcasting, is a very it's light, it's bare bones, but that's sometimes just what you need. Like if you're just trying to stream a game and you don't want a webcam or something, that's all you need. You just slap that up there, and it's very it's after a couple hitches, it's easy to set up. And there's some nice videos online that explain how to do that. So yeah, I'll probably just still be using XSplit for some things and OBS for others. It's a nice transition.
That's kind of like the general like gist of things. Like Patrick, for example, he does streaming stuff with the website, and he's kind of the same boat. Like some things work better on OBS, some things work better on XSplit.
I use OBS. Just is like,
use both.
If I'm streaming like Kingdom Hearts, which I have been still working my way through gradually over the months, I'll just use OBS because I just need the game and that's it.
Right.
Like XSplit would be amazing if it had one thing that like something like a TriCaster does, and that's you could edit a scene without having that be the one that's playing.
Doesn't have that? That's crazy. Okay.
No, it's like you can edit a scene, but that's the one that's playing at the moment.
Right. Have you tried that other like really complex one? The what was it, like Adobe something or was like?
I can imagine Adobe being that like complex enough to do that, but no, it's
yeah.
I'll look into that, but Adobe usually requires a large amount of money to get a license for.
No, it was a free thing. I forgot what it was called.
OBS.
Jury used it for a while, but he couldn't get his head around it. And same with Brad, I think it was. But yes, people will say that one is complex, but gives you other functions. They may want to look at that.
I guess the one game I've been trying to play is Kerbal Space Program. I've got like an hour.
I've played
that,
some
maybe.
Of that.
It's I've been trying to play it. Like I'd go into like the sandbox mode, make something. It's like, yeah, I think this is the right thing. I've seen videos and like you want to make sure you have decouplers for like the rocket. Anybody doesn't know, Kerbal Space Program is you are basically a sandbox game of being NASA going to the moon.
Yeah.
And you learn through trial and error all the things that they had to figure out without
Except
killing
all,
people.
All us astronauts are expendable.
Yeah,
apparently.
You will like make a rocket and then realize, oh wait, I need to have this certain thing. I've burned $1 million and killed 3 people because I forgot to make it so that rockets went off in different stages and instead it just blows up.
So me and my friend had like a discussion about Kerbal because I haven't played Kerbal, but he loves Kerbal. He's a civil engineer, and people don't know I graduated in aeronautical, The beauty of Kerbal is your approach to it. So, Doubleton, you said something very specific. You said, like, you will learn the things NASA had to go through as they learned, like, how to make the space program, right? If you approach that game as just like, hey, I want to make something ridiculous and try to get that to the moon, it won't work. And that's kind of the good and bad thing about Kerbal. Because he started with, like, this crazy thing with just, like, too many engines everywhere and just...
Stuff all over the place. Yeah.
And it doesn't go anywhere. Like, he gets off the ground and it turns out to be too heavy. And it just, like, he made one, for example, where he had to, like, it was a multi-stage rocket where the biggest stage had to be let go because it'd run out of fuel just to get him out of the air. Only, like, a bit after he'd cleared the launch platform. Because it just, he was just so heavy. So, like, stuff like that is kind of awesome because you can do it, but it's kind of sad because. As he played more and more, and he eventually got to the point where he got to the moon and like had to put satellites around the moon and stuff like that, as he played more and more, he ended up with just stuff that looks exactly like what you see on TV. He ends up with just like straight up multi-stage rockets, like three or like a multiple of thereof of thrusters at the bottom, a medium stage and a small stage at the top, and he just ended up. He may as well have just been like done up from scratch. Just look at what the like original. Early space flight rockets look like and just did those because they work. And at some point that's a good thing because if you approach it like how Therb did, as a learning process, then you will see like why they made those decisions, why spacecraft can't look crazy. But
the
it's sad
style
to me
and everything, and the the lighthearted nature of it all, it's actually fairly scientific and accurate.
Yeah.
I hesitate to use the word accurate, but you get my point. Like, there's a lot to it when it comes to making sure the thing actually works properly.
Yeah, it's accurate enough that I think it kills the fun. Like, people like Vinny, for example, on Giant Bomb, used to do a couple. Like, I think he did two or so videos for might have been subscriber only, where he just like got a like designed some shit and tried to make it fly. And there were like times where he just this dumb, this terrible, stupid looking thing, and everyone in the chat just wanted it to fly. And it would have been magical if it did, but it never got off the ground. And stuff like that kind of makes it sad, but it's realistic. So I don't know. Like, Shinboy, where do you fall on that? Like, do you like the realism of it, or would you rather it be a bit crazy?
I like the realism of it because a lot of times those things that look ridiculous and don't make it, it's really entertaining to watch them fail spectacularly.
Yeah. That's like I'm going to like attach 12 rockets to this one stage, like all symmetrically linked up. Let's see how badly this blows up.
Yeah, because like, and then like, if it, and it's just floating around in orbit, you're like, oh, that worked.
Like, holy crap, I could actually make this. Like, this might be viable. Let's see how. Like, let's go down this road now.
But now it's just like, oh man, the thing blew up everywhere, and there is debris flying everywhere, and the one astronaut still is happy for some reason because he's hard coded to always be happy.
I love the astronaut cam. It is the best. Especially when things go wrong.
I look really concerned. Like, oh god, what's going on?
I came to how
adorable.
Much is that now?
It's like, it was $22, right? Something like that.
It was 20, I picked it up during the Steam sale and I was like, you know what, I know I want to try this out. I will continue to try it out. I played around with tutorials. It's just like I've done so many sandbox just build like games. It's like I'm almost burnt out for the moment and need to get back into like strategy or just something until the creativity.
Lucky for you, in a month, Rome 2 is coming out.
Or if you want to jump into some Paradox games, Europa Universalis 4 next week.
I saw that. I knew you'd go crazy for that game.
Of course.
I don't know, guys. Dinocube comes out next month. This month, even.
It's true.
Same day, same throw.
Tales of Xillia is coming out in 4 days.
You guys to wrap your minds around the fact that Saints Row 4 and Dive Kick are coming out on the same day. That might be the dumbest day in the history of video games.
It could be. Unlike another day. How'd the July 4th thing go?
That's August 20th? August 20th?
August 20th.
Yeah, that's the start of the like the tail end of the year. Like the summer hiatus has ended.
Man, when do you guys think that the new consoles will launch? Mid-November, December, November?
I'm feeling a Sony October surprise.
I really think
the 29th.
Like, one of them is going to pick 11, 12, 13.
Oh, no, you're probably right.
I'm thinking Sony October 29th surprise.
Man, because they've gone through the FCC. They're so far ahead of Microsoft at the moment. They're done almost. So
13.
I don't know. Also, like, Microsoft's done a lot of backtracking and have like more or less the same footing. It's coming down to the games, which all knew it would be, but
I just meant like as a hardware standpoint, because Sony is actually pretty much ready to ship already, and Microsoft has
once they get supply, they can just ship.
It's how quickly can they get all those units out is the thing.
Yeah,
they've been pumping out crazy units if the rumors are to be believed.
At least one more game that we can discuss. I don't know, Thurbleton.
That's pretty much all I got.
We didn't talk about like the other game that's important this week that actually did come out this week.
What game came out this week?
The BioShock Infinite DLC.
Oh yeah,
we need to talk about that because I think it's the dumbest thing. I haven't played it yet, obviously, but I don't want to because I think it's
really funny that Ken Levine is blaming the internet basically for that DLC.
What happened?
If you watch interviews with him, he's pretty much just like, we needed to get something out there because – this is the general gist of it anyway. He's like, we needed to get something out there because you people were complaining that there was nothing. So here you go. That's basically what he said, more or less.
It I wouldn't blame
it's
the
internet.
It's
actually pretty fun.
But yeah, like it's every other game studio who has done this to – like basically make the DLC out before release, which has gotten people pissed off. And yet it's like, oh, hey, we
want to just
do
like, there's a no-win situation for developers. Yeah,
maybe if they'd done it with some transparency.
That DLC is actually not bad. It's actually pretty good for what it is. If you're into BioShock Infinite's combat, it's actually pretty good.
What would you guys have preferred? Like, if they, because for me, if you ask me what I would want for a new DLC, I would just say a mutator pack for the original game. Like, it would be cool if they did like Halo Skulls equivalent. For if they released like as the first DLC, like a Halo Skulls equivalent for the original game and maybe a couple more powers. And that's essentially it. That would be really cool. Because for people not familiar, the skulls for Halo were like modifiers in the game. So some were like easy stuff, like you can't reload a checkpoint, or that was one of the hardest ones of the game. But anyway, that
Bastion had that stuff too.
Yeah, like you can't reload a checkpoint, or you can't, or there's like stuff where if you kill an enemy, they burst into like confetti and like just this crazy stuff that just changed the basic gameplay. If they did that and then also added some more powers, that would be my ideal DLC. But or like respecking. If I had respecking in a DLC, that would have been awesome. But it's sad because this isn't what I wanted. But the next DLC sounds like the coolest.
Well, like, the thing is, before we get to the next DLC, people's quote unquote problems with this DLC is strictly based on their problems with the combat. Everything outside of, like, regardless of what you think of the combat, the systems that they've done in this DLC are really neat.
Right.
The levels.
Wait, describe it, because you're the only one here who played it, right?
It's wave based.
Is it not horde mode?
It's not.
Okay.
Because in between each wave, it brings you out of the map. And you can like sort of buy restock and everything, but each horde is different. I don't know. It's really similar to horde mode, but it's not horde mode. It is sort of wave based. The way it works is you start out in a little lobby, then you pick whichever map you want to go to, of which there are four. And from what I've played, all the ones I've played, I think I played two of them, seem pretty well designed. They all have the skylines and they all have a few interesting tears. So the things that were good about the BioShock combat, you know, skylines and tears are all there. And it tells you what type of enemies you're going to be facing and how many. And before you enter, well, they don't tell you how many enemies you face until you enter. Before you enter, it says, okay, for this one, there's this blue ribbon challenge. And what they are, for example, only kill enemies by jumping off of skylines. Only kill enemies with these two weapons. Only kill enemies, like kill enemies without using any tears. Stuff like that. So those encourage you to mess around with different weapons.
Mm.
And then after each...
tie it in with another game, but it's almost like the Gambit system we might be seeing in Guild Wars 2.
Yes, that's another discussion for another day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm foreshadowing.
Or for me, it would be, like Gears of War. They had in the most recent one, they had like these challenges that do it with X gun or whatever.
Oh, and you so like to, yeah. Hitman Absolutions, don't get found out, wear one costume, only use Hitman gun. This will make game more fun.
It's like the contracts, but they're like map provided. Well,
like a lot of the complaints that were levied against BioShock Infinite were that it's too easy to get stuck using the same one or two weapons the whole time, and this sort of discourages using the same weapons actively by giving you more money if you use whatever they tell you to or request that you do. So afterwards, you kill like the half dozen things or the one big handyman or whatever they happen to throw at you that level. This was all low-level stuff, so it was pretty easy. You go back to a little base where it has every weapon and the vending machines from the regular game, so you can buy and upgrade vigors, and I think you can upgrade weapons. And then it also chucks at you either one of the tonics that increases health, salts, or shield, depending on what you pick, or a piece of gear. Because remember, and there was gear in that game.
Because I think Vinny got both in one of his.
You can get both. I've gotten times where I've gotten one or I've gotten both. Then you just go right back in. Just go back to another wave. It's really simple, and you can use the money to buy in like the main lobby. I think you can get concept art. I know you can get like models of enemies and NPCs and stuff to stand around in there. It's modeled like a museum.
That was really cool.
For $5, what you're getting, if you enjoy the combat well enough to play a whole lot of it, it's decent. It's well made.
That's the caveat, right? Because apparently it was really divisive. Like for me, I thought it was just, it was a shooter and I don't play many shooters, so it's pretty novel to me. But a lot of people who played a lot of shooters thought Bioshock Infinite was just like meh.
If you're going to, if you have completely 100% decided that you are getting both parts of the next one, you should just get the season pass and check this out because it'll be the same price anyway.
Right. And that next one, then, are we to talk about it? Can we talk about it now? The next one, I didn't want to watch the trailer for this. I just saw the screenshots because I don't want any of it ruined for me.
The trailer sounds like the coolest thing away.
Okay, because essentially it's just Booker and Elizabeth in Rapture, which sounds fucking crazy. So what's our speculation here? Like, is this them?
This Bioshock is not them. Infinite spoilers abound for the rest of this show.
Oh, shit. We do have to go to spoilers, don't we, for this? Oh, no.
Do we?
Oh, no.
Well, I'm just going to say spoilers, be warned.
I mean, okay. Here's the funny thing. Listening to podcasts and whatnot with Ken Levine, he gets pissed when people, like, the game came out 3 months ago.
Yeah, that's really
good. I haven't bought it yet, nor played it.
Okay. Right.
Well, that's too bad.
We can't spoil it. It's too good.
We can't.
No, I mean, like, it came out 3 months ago. If you were that passionate about the game and care about spoilers, you should have watched it by
yourself. If you're that interested in this DLC, you would have played the main game by now. So if you don't want this spoiled but haven't played the game, you're listening to the wrong podcast. Are we
going to go into spoilers? No, are we going to spoilers?
I am
new
full
drama?
Steam ahead into spoilers.
All right. Noob, do you want to leave?
I'll tap out since there's only Bioshock spoilers.
All right, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll end the show, do some plugs, and then post music and all that, we'll talk about this, all right?
Okay, done. All right, that sounds like that's good.
Right. Shimboy, 630, any plugs you'd like to dole out?
You should all buy Dive Kick when it comes out, and if not, you're a bad person. Also, next
week, I want to give thanks to everybody, any listeners who did go to greenlightdivekick.com and got that game greenlit. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Anybody who didn't, fuck you.
I have one other plug, kind of important, that you alluded to before. Next weekend, everyone's favorite lyrical mastermind, Squiddle, as well as his partner in crime and Aladdin Brave New World duet partner, Reyes, will be out here in Nueva Jersey. We're going to a concert in the city in New York on Thursday. So they're making a weekend out of it. We might do something, probably will. Even if it's not live, I'll just sort of get a local recording of it and then either send it to Cynic or edit it myself and then send it to Cynic or someone, I don't know. So something will be had because everyone's going to be here, so you might as well do something with it.
Yeah, there will be something next week.
If you guys are watching the Twitter, I'll post it there. And
I have access to Twitter too, so I'll just post it.
Yay!
It will be posted on the
at
Twitter.
At the Lincoln Cast on 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 Twitter. At the Lincoln Cast
on Twitter.
On Instagram.
No, not on Instagram, just on Twitter. What about Noob? Yeah. Any plugs from you?
Project Reality. Everyone should check it out. Giant Bump is a gaming hub. And this is a secret message. Rizaya no Kajitsu's translation patch was out last week. That's about what I've been doing for realsies over the last week. For anyone who gets it, there's your secret little thing.
Also, one last thing. Shinboy 630's podcast music of the week for this week was Amon Amarth's With Odin on Our Side, for anyone wondering, for anyone keeping track at home.
God damn it.
Carry on. Good album.
Self-confessed Cynic?
My plug, it has to be Might and Magic Quest for Heroes. I was so surprised by how good that game was.
I didn't hear what you said, never mind.
Yeah, Might and Magic, Clash of Heroes. It's on every platform, pretty much. It's way cheaper on the mobile platforms, Android and iOS, so pick it up there. It's, if you like RPG and Match 3 games, I think it's good effort and should definitely be rewarded for being an interesting, like, I hope there's more games like this in the future. Even though I do have some problems with it, but I'll probably talk about that more in next episode.
Sweet. Just my plugs are going to be, again, at the Linking Cast on Twitter.
At the Linking Cast on Twitter?
Yeah. Any emails you have?
No, he means the linkingcast.tumblr.com.
Yeah. it feels weird plugging my own Twitch channel, but mm-hmm. I'm having a lot of fun streaming these podcasts. Like, we aren't going to do a video thing, but we'll slap like a fancy image up there for the Scotch Castle, Leaking Cast, what have you. If anybody is inclined to make like neat artwork, I guess, for the show, we'll throw it up there. Just send it to email us at thelinkingcast@gmail.com. Fridays or
Saturdays. I thought it was the Linking Cast at Twitter.
That
or at the Linking Cast on Twitter.
Yeah,
I'm so confused.
That's both the same. Same.
Join our circle on Google Plus.
No, not that. But Fridays or Saturdays we usually end up streaming, and I have a lot of fun streaming this and just being sort of like Vinny and throwing up silly images. pretty much while we've been talking about stuff, I put up a video or something. That's all I got. I feel that there's something I'm missing, but oh well.
I've been watching The International the whole time we've been doing this podcast.
Have you have you gotten any Steam cards? We didn't talk about Steam trading cards.
Let's move on. Let's end this out of Bioshock.
I've complained about Steam trading cards a couple.
We're near the 2-hour mark, or we're getting close to it. So I know someone's
going to leave
soon.
In like 20 minutes. So
all right, thank you for listening to the Scotchcast. Stay tuned after the music for us talking about Bioshock Infinite, Burial at Sea, upcoming DLC.
Just go straight away. Let's do this.
All right, and we're back with the power of editing.
So
yay.
That ending pretty much gave Irrational free reign to do whatever the fuck they wanted with this DLC.
And I like that they did that, but I'm kind of sad that they went to something they've done before. I don't know, man.
The way Ken Levine, when he was talking to Drew, he pretty much sounded like he really wanted to go back to Rapture, but without Rapture as the focus, which it seems like this
Wait,
is what
Drew
this is.
Or Alex?
Interesting.
I mean, Alex. That's what I meant.
Alex,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for correcting me.
So what we're talking about is the end of Bioshock Infinite, multiple universe or multiple multi-world theory. It's been so long since I've talked about that. I've forgotten the actual names of the physics theories that they use. But
quantum mechanics.
I love that they hired a scientist as like consultant.
A consultant? Yeah. That's weird.
I didn't hear that. So is this on the Alex Navarro interview thing?
Yeah, on the interview dump truck.
Oh, I need to check that out. But essentially allows them, because essentially Booker and Elizabeth exist in infinite amounts of worlds, they can reconstruct a storyline with those two characters pretty much anywhere in any permutation.
Because they've said previously that they exist, but their relationship might be different.
Right. And are they father and daughter in this one? Like, can we get that feeling?
I don't know. See, this is where it gets really confusing.
Yeah.
Because by relationship is different. The way I see it is Booker and Elizabeth could just be constants throughout time space.
Through various podcasts. Like, I know the Nerdist interviewed Ken Levine as well, and so I'm not sure which one he talked about for which. But the long and the short is, when people asked him, is there ever an iteration in all the infinite time space dimensions where they are not that like related? Because the funny thing was is him and his girlfriend dressed up as like Booker and Elizabeth,
and that's weird, right?
Well, no, before they finished the game.
Oh, right.
And so when they finished it, it's like we didn't plan it. It's like we're not like that.
Yeah, when I was at PAX, this was a few days before Infinite had come out, there are a lot of couples dressed like Booker and Elizabeth. And then after I finished the game, I was like, oh man, that must be weird.
That's
for
weird.
You guys.
That's weird. We talked about this in our spoiler cast. I thought for like the first half of that game that at some point they would just start boning because it's an attractive girl and a badass dude. This has to happen, right?
But we'd at least kiss or something.
Yeah, something would happen, and you just go get all old boy on that. You guys have seen old boy, right? Come on, you have
nope.
Oh, fuck. Oh, okay. So it can get weird in that shit. So I would be, anyway, so the weird thing with this is, like, from what I got from the screenshots, because I haven't seen any video, is essentially him lighting her cigarette thing, right? That's kind of like the screenshot that's been put out. And that's not something a father does. So it's... Well,
maybe in the 50s.
Yeah.
Really? Okay, maybe. Yeah. I don't...
Yeah, really? You forget that smoking was advertised as something that was very good for your health and a cure for many ailments.
It just seems too sensual a gesture. It seems to be.
I don't think the relationship's going to play that much of a role. They talked about, like, part one is Booker and part two is Elizabeth. And
they haven't stated
this part, but it sounds more like it's just a noir story of
Cynic, you have to realize if you watch that trailer and listen to a few other things, when that DLC starts, Booker and Elizabeth don't know each other.
Oh, okay.
Like, Elizabeth I imagine it's going to be like a noir detective story of Elizabeth is coming into Booker's office saying she's got a case that needs solved, and Booker goes out to solve it.
Apparently, the first half of the first part of that, Ken Levine said there is literally zero combat. Just you walking around Rapture.
Seeing Rapture before it was destroyed. That, like, a lot of people wanted to see, like, how Rapture was destroyed. But Levine wanted to make a story that was
takes place during the fall of Rapture, but it's sort of in the background, relevant to the story.
It's basically the same way of Columbia was getting destroyed. Like that was the backdrop of the main story.
Mm-hmm. Right. But so, like, did we get a feel for because he said, like, the relationship, like, Rapture isn't the focus going forward, right? That was part of their ideas for it. So do we have any idea of, like, are there going to be other characters? Are the twins going to be there? Is Elizabeth going to play? Oh, man. That could be really exciting. I just don't – it'd be weird if they go through the whole, like, discovery of him being her father again. That would be weird.
I doubt they would do that.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the way I see it is Booker and Elizabeth are just constant beings throughout time space. Their relationships – is different in every single universe.
This game needs, like, something either on his shelf or on the desk or something is a little miniature lighthouse for the opening scene. Man, woman,
what
and a lighthouse.
What we need is Neil deGrasse Tyson in here explaining BioShock to us.
Yeah. Well,
or Mikio Kaku in here.
That guy can... those two guys can say anything and I just am enraptured. So
it's funny. That's the way I am with Ken Levine.
Yeah, I agree. Ken Levine
and Mark
talk
Cerny,
about whatever.
Unrelated.
Yeah. So what's he said? So essentially, how long have they been working on it? And do we know, like, how long it's going to be, or do we have any idea? Because you're playing as Elizabeth for the second half.
They
started this, right?
The way Ken said that it is, they split the teams off. They took the main combat designer dude, and he sort of started working on concepts and ended up with what eventually became Clash in the Clouds.
Right.
And then the world building team, I guess you could call them, sort of started on, like, Ken Levine took his team and started on this. Like,
right.
Like, I think he said, like, a week after the game shipped or launched. Right.
Which is kind of funny because he spent a long time going, I'm not sure if I'm going to make games anymore. And then but whatever. He's like Kojima. I don't mind Kojima-esque figures.
Well, also, he had a legal obligation to make stuff for this game.
I hate this. I feel weird referencing this. Like, okay, I guess to anybody still listening, a big thing with the podcast on Twitch, at least whenever I'm going to host it, is, well, like, host the stream. We aren't going to do, like, webcams.
No,
we're
not.
It's audio podcast. I want to make the audio quality good. I'm currently streaming, just looping the trailer. About 30 seconds in, we see, like, a lovely backdrop of Rapture and all that with some fish swimming around. There's two people one of them's leaning against a railing. It's a man and a woman who look very similar, like the two twins.
Yeah, yes. They're gonna be there.
Just because of the comedy of it.
Okay, Those two characters are great characters.
I'm watching the trailer. Possibly the best character in that game, arguably. I don't know. I'd prefer Booker and Elizabeth, but a lot of people love the twins.
The Lutesses were great because they were well written and acted well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And they're off kilter. Like it's so much easier to make enigmatic characters like fun, right? I think it's harder to make someone that you actually play as or spend time with to be as interesting. But whatever. Okay, so this is so I haven't played Bioshock 1 yet, and I'm watching the trailer now. I can see why people are interested in this world. This is like really okay. I can see why this is kind of cool.
Bioshock's fantastic.
I wonder how much of this translates to the original. Oh, wow. Yeah. Reveal of Elizabeth. This is pretty cool. I can see why people like this. And it's weird. Yeah.
It's weird seeing them in this
different context. It's kind of interesting.
Also, so you guys like how Booker's office looks really, really similar.
Oh, shit. I love the concept art. With him in a smoking gun and her right? with red lips in the background.
So noir.
Is it weird?
As long as it's not LA noir, it'll be fine.
That's the thing, right? I don't actually like a lot of noir fiction. It's too dark for me. And in terms of, like, it's usually very nihilistic. And so this could be awesome. And this is probably going to be amazing. But if they stick to noir, a lot of people won't like it because noir
itself
is. What I'm hoping
for is the when Ken Levine said the first half of the first pack is like no combat. Mm. It's just you walking around as Booker and getting like an internal monologue as he sees clues and stuff like classic noir stuff.
Cool. That would be cool. That would be great. That'd be great. Or like what's his face? Do you think you would get adventure gamey? Do you think he'll go that far, or do you think he'll
sort of pixel hunty? I hope not, because I thought L.A. Noire was really bad.
I actually really loved L.A. Noire, so I don't know, but not for that part of it. I like the conversations part.
I just hope it's all story expedition or exhibition.
There's going to be some combat, like that's a given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that kind of makes me sad. But if it's just like him and a pistol and like no powers, that could be really cool. But I bet he's going to do plasmids.
There are powers. If you look, he lights your cigarette with his fingers.
Oh, yeah, with the... Yeah.
I mean, like, this is still
plasmids Rapture. Were part plasmid. Of, I'll say, plasmids were part of Rapture.
But was the fire hands a plasmid? I don't think so.
Yeah, it was.
Was it? Okay.
It all wasn't right. like, so that's like a bolt. It was just sort of like whatever you like were targeted on caught fire.
Okay, so it makes sense. Okay. So he's going to have plasmids.
It was part of Rapture.
So it's going to be Bioshock Infinite, but in Rapture.
Is not necessarily.
Like. Because if you think about it, the first like hours of Bioshock is no combat, or so. So,
I guess.
What's bugging me is like with the original trailer for Bioshock Infinite proper, like going back and like listening to those again, a lot of the stuff he says is like referencing the entire game as a whole, like the meta of it. Whereas like and so with this one, I'm like. What is he talking about? Burial at Sea. What is like? What does this all mean? Trying to decipher it ahead of time.
Cause... Yeah, because now everyone's overanalyzing the Burial at Sea name because of the meaning that the Infinite subtitle ended up having for the main game.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. But either way, I just love the idea of being a detective. So
Have they announced when this is coming out?
Half is coming out this year, the other half not.
Okay, well, I mean, like, hey, we got 4 months left, sort of thing. Like, it's
which part are you guys more excited for, playing as Booker or playing as Elizabeth?
I'm excited.
I'm more curious about Elizabeth.
I'm excited for this part, but yeah, it's. I think the gameplay is what is exciting you, Shinboy.
I'm curious about Elizabeth because if Twitter is to be believed, Ken Levine doesn't even know what he's doing with that yet.
Oh wow!
That's pretty funny.
It's like someone tweeted at him who's like, you should have Elizabeth sneak around and have it be stealth and ever only use a melee weapon. Bro, like, well, like not stealth, but a lot of like, you're going to have to set things up more. It's like limit her to either like only throwing stuff or more like a melee focus, sneaky focus. And he's like, huh, I didn't think of that. That might not be a bad idea.
Has anyone asked Levine if he's played Last of Us? I would love to hear what his thoughts on that.
It'd be funny. He just walks out and goes, "That game sucks."
Yeah, he might. Away. He might. You never know. Some people don't like that game. But
but yeah, it's a big thing that I guess the driving idea behind part two, whether or not he may or not know what he's doing, is that he doesn't want Elizabeth to be just as brawly like as Booker.
Right.
So as Shiboy said, like a lot of like having to evade or like avoid fights if possible, and that's always a tough thing because everyone's like, oh, that just makes the fight harder. I want to still do the fight, and that's going to be a tough challenge for Levine. I think
you should just listen to his interview with Alex Navarro. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Is she going to have powers? Like powers? Like, well, or she's just going to be gone?
I think she does have some powers because Shinboy, having of the three of us, the one who most recently played Bioshock, the original, you have like some sort of breath ability, right? Like cold.
What do you mean?
Do you have like some sort of cold ability?
Maybe? I don't remember.
It's just the last scene of her blowing out the like Booker's finger that's he made fire out of. Seems a bit more icy than a normal person blowing smoke or blowing out a cigarette, a lighter.
Winter Blast was out of your hand. It wasn't her breath.
Still, though, I think they could find some ways. Like, oh yeah, she has Winter Blast.
I'm just wondering. Yeah, I don't know, because some part of me is really sad that Ken Levine likes combat and that kind of stuff, because I really wouldn't. I would love this if it was just like
you
a
like
straight
movies.
Up detective fiction.
Is there going to be tears?
That's what kind of I meant. Like, does she have powers? Like, does she just do
none
care?
Of this
yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. Is that it? Is that all we have to
talk about? I like that Ken Levine likes combat, because I like combat. If I didn't want combat, I would watch a movie. That's what I'm pretty much with him. It's like if I was here just to tell a story and literally nothing else, I'd be making movies. Or I'd be watching movies in my case.
I think the games are capable of more than that, but
I disagree.
That discussion
if you are here for literally just a story, what sets games apart from everything else is the systems, is the mechanics. If you don't have that, you might as well just be making movies.
No, you're wrong.
Interactive experiences.
Games have user-defined pacing, which is unique, and also has...
Dear Esther, that should just be a movie.
Oh, God. I've never played that. I might try that at some point.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people didn't like it.
By the time this podcast comes out, it will already happen, but it is apparently yesterday.
What?
As Cynic and I, or Cynic and myself, the Shin Boy may not know, and I guess anybody listening, a neat YouTube channel is the Vlogbrothers of, like, basically like VidCon and SciShow, and like a lot of the YouTube shows we will reference. Very educational and fun. They have this whole community. And one of the members of the community, like many years ago, died of cancer. But they said, like, hey, to memorialize you, is there anything you want me to do or want us to do on your birthday? And she says, oh, just tell everyone that, you know, they love each other.
Yay. Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
In fact, Google it. That's a good idea for a plug, which is specifically The Fault in Our Stars, which is the book by John Green, is supposedly really good. I think it's too lovey-dovey for me, but... is like an adorable love story with a twist. It's very different than most, and I think it's probably worth checking out. I've pretty much just read the blurb. I'm like, nope, no thank you, but it's gotten incredible reviews and everyone seems to love it. I think it's nominated for a bunch of awards coming up, but whatever. Supposedly really good.
We should probably
a bonus plug for post podcast plug. So yeah.
A PPP, if you will.
PPP.
Oh, I want to play PPP up in here. Yeah.
Cloudbearer Kingdom looked really cool. But also dumb. I don't know if I'd pay that much money for it, but if it was like $5, I might pick it up.
Bye. Ending this podcast.
No, see, like the best part is Cynic is the one who has to go soon, and he's the one who
like
kept
now,
talking.
Like right now.
You just have to end it. You just have to say goodbye.
But you're the host.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye. At the Lincoln Cast on Twitter.
At the Lincoln Cast on Twitter.